Blog Talk Radio.
You have reached the family of Airwaves America. Renaissance Radio presents the Dave and GC Rock Show. This is a show where we try to think for ourselves and offer thought-provoking, stimulating, informative, and entertaining discussion. Welcome.
Welcome. You got the Dave, part of the Dave and G-Ski Rock Show tonight. G-Ski's wifey's birthday, so he's taking her out. He can't be around to do the show. I say, good on you. You take care of wifey because she tolerates you. And by that, I mean my wife tolerates me. So I have to give him props on that. So, yeah, you got the on and popping with the Dave and G-Ski Rock Show. So we got the, looks like Susie's in the house. Welcome, Susie. How you doing? If anybody wants to give a call in, phone number is 516-387-1705. And that would be a way to either listen to the show, or if you want to interact, just hit one on the keypad. And as soon as I see an indication, I'll bring you in. I got the switchboard tonight. I'm running the show. I'm running the whole train. I'm driving the train. So, as far as I know, G-Ski won't be joining us because he's arranged for me to take care of the whole show. We got a great, great show for you. We have a great, great show as always. As we always have a great, great show. And in the back of my mind, I'm always saying, we'll see. So that's what's going on. You want to email us, you can find me on Facebook. I'm at David Graham. I'm in New Hampshire. If you want to find me. I'm pretty much not on Twitter anymore, just because I don't like them. But I'm on Facebook mostly to promote my my music performance act and the DJ thing. So I got a gig coming up in not this Sunday but next Sunday, and I should still be here for the show, but we'll see. Anyways, I got so many things that I want to, so many different directions. I kind of got a little inspired last week when G-Ski was talking about my book, and so I broke out opened up a couple of the chapters, and I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. Oh yeah, that's today. That's right now. So. We'll be visiting some of that stuff for sure. I think the obvious biggest thing that's going on right now is the whole Afghanistan thing. And when CNN starts criticizing the president, well, then they have to hide him. So he has been pretty much, for the most part, for the last week or so, he has been under the radar. He has just been hiding out on quote-unquote vacation. So you never really get an explanation on this. When you do talk to him, it's just gaslighting. Yes, it was the perfect way to do it. It was the perfect decision. It was, everything was, you know, the way it should have been done. And of course, as I was listening to some Mark Levin from a couple of days ago. He had a clip from Nancy Pelosi who said, "I commend the president's action. It was strong, decisive, and it was the right thing to do." And then he goes, "No, it wasn't, and it wasn't, and it wasn't." That just made me laugh. So I quoted it real quick and sent it to G-Ski, and he just typed back, and he was laughing. It was funny. It's so obvious that everything is partisan. I mean, if Trump was in office right now and this was all happening, and first of all, I don't believe for a second that this would be happening if he was in office. If something like this happened and there was nothing, you know, it kind of hit him out of the blue and for whatever reason, they would just use it to bludgeon. In fact, they used anything they possibly could. They used COVID. They used the vaccines. They used, anything he did or didn't do, anything he said or didn't say was used to bludgeon him. So the guy can't do anything, you know, right in eyes of people who just hate him for partisan reasons. And why do they hate him? Why does hate exist for partisan reasons? Well, it's because you want, not you. It's because one would want power. And he's standing in the way of that. He's standing in the way of those people getting power. That kind of goes with one of the things that I'm going to be going over a little bit later in the book. The book is called Reality is Not Optional. If you don't have it, you can find it on lulu.com. Just type in my name, apparently. It's about 5 years, 5-6 years old now, maybe. Yeah, probably about that. And there was a lot, there's a lot that's in it that was like ahead of everyone's awareness. Kind of wish that I hadn't, you know, in a way I hadn't gotten that other job so I could have spent some time promoting it like I did my first book, because I think, like I said last week, it was a better book. So, Whenever I get a chance, I'd like to go through the Think for Yourself series that is always growing. Whenever I think of a good point, whenever I think of an argument, whenever I think of how to overcome an argument, into this series called Think for Yourself. So I had a point that I texted it to G-Ski, and I was honestly saying, look, I'm trying to develop this concept because I need like feedback on it, because there's things that I don't always think of, you know, and somebody says, oh, well, what about this? And then I have to all, you know, rethink my point. But what I've got so far is that progressives who hate the country, and they will never admit that. They say, no, we don't hate the country. We just hate, you know, whatever their reason is. But it's basically, you know, you hate the country. You hate the flag. You don't like the flag. You don't like the rule of law. You don't like how it's being run. You don't like the society. You hate the country. But the reason they hate the country, or the way they justify hating the country, is usually citing past horrors or evils of the government of this country. Smallpox blankets, slavery, whatever else they can think of, that it was basically the government, you know, violated people's rights. They will cite those past horrors as the reason that they hate the way the country is right now, the way it's set up, the way it goes. But here's the thing. they have full faith and blind faith in the current government. Well, does that make any sense? Does that make any sense? You're just caught up in a current of narrative, and that's, and you're just riding along and riding along. So the point, the way I wrote it was this: progressives who hate the country cite past horrors and evils of the government, but have full faith in the current government. So if anybody has anything to add to that, I'll take the critique. If you have anything to argue against that, I'll take the critique, because that's kind of just like a raw idea that I had today while I was delivering mail. So, like I said, the biggest thing going on is the Afghanistan thing. And, you know, it couldn't really have been done worse.
Hey,
I have some audio that kind of puts it succinctly. I think this is a looks like his name is Corey Stewart, and he is a former international development secretary. He sounds British. I think he is. But he's being interviewed, and he's talking about the extraordinary betrayal of the United States and how they left. After this, maybe we'll comment on it. But I mean, I can go through and tell you everything that he's going to tell you, but and then play it. But I'm just going to play it. I want to make sure everybody can hear it.
Provided all the air support for the Afghans. They didn't just take their own planes away. They took away 16,000 civilian contractors who were maintaining the Afghan helicopters. They took them out of the country, so they couldn't even fly. And the morale damage, they left in the middle of the night from Bagram. They didn't even tell the commander that they were leaving. The Afghans woke up in the morning, all their planes disabled. The Americans have left, no support of any kind. And you're asking who exactly? Who is President Biden asking to fight? I mean, if you are an Afghan woman teaching in a school in Pulichaki, really? Really? I mean, what are they expecting? A bunch of guys come riding in pickup trucks with heavy machine guns into your town? You don't want the Taliban in there. You don't support them. But if you're genuinely asking them to put up a suicidal fight when the United States and Britain was not even prepared to keep 2,500 soldiers and some planes in the country with zero casualties, zero risk over the last few years. I mean, this has been an extraordinary betrayal. Right? It's difficult to get the figures, but as far as one can tell, no U.S. serviceman has been killed in Afghanistan for 18 months. No British serviceman for longer than that. This has not been a costly mission since 2014. This was the easiest thing to continue to do for the Afghan people. There was absolutely no reason to do this. To do this, to basically hand them over to the Taliban and then say, it's your fault, you're all a bunch of cowards, when we pulled out and weren't prepared to accept a tiny presence. We have 10 times the number of people who've been in South Korea in the U.S. military for 70 years. Do we think taking them out is going to be smart? Right, nothing's going to happen if you suddenly take them out? This idea that because you haven't sorted everything in 20 years means you have to just walk away, what are we going to do? Okay, so we haven't sorted North and South Korea in 70 years. Take the troops out. I mean, it's insanity.
Well, I can't find anything that guy just said that I don't agree with. It has to have been done like this on purpose. Now, whether or not the people that made this decision were doing it for Marxist division, society division reasons, that's what's happened. Because, you know, there are still people who just, you know, well, like Nancy Pelosi, she'll back him up. What'd she say? I commend the president's actions. It was strong, decisive, and it was the right thing to do. Well, my dear, no, it wasn't, and it wasn't, and it wasn't. I mean, if you're going to sign on to that, then you're going to also own it. You know, she's so smarmy that she'll sign on to stuff. And then later on, when people forgot she signed on to it, she can say, no, I never supported that, you know, whatever. Politician. Absolute typical politician. Stumbled on some other sound from Biden today, but it's kind of unrelated, and it's a little older because I remember hearing about this. Somebody, he was on TV and somebody handed him a note and said, you know, hey, you got something on your chin. Well, I don't care what was on his chin. I don't care about the note. I care about what he said right before he got handed the note. Now I have to play it. All right, here we go. Sleepy Joe. All right, that's him.
Can you all see us and hear us?
Can you hear us and see us?
Perfect.
All right.
Jay, you're beginning to convince the American people there is a thing called climate crisis. About time.
That's my thing with this one. That's why I say it's kind of unrelated to Afghanistan. But, I mean, that's kind of a oops. You know, you're beginning to convince people that there really is such a thing as climate crisis. And it's about time. By the way, the thing that was on his chin was a zit. I don't know what they expected him to do about it. It's probably from wearing masks or something, whatever. You see those people with mask acne? That's now a thing, apparently. Mask acne. It's because it's from wearing masks. Now your face is all broken out because you got all the grease from the mask and you never away from it. And it's... Anyway. Talk about squirrel. Squirrel! So in the middle of the night, it was decided... And again, I don't know if it was decided for Marxist societal division reasons, but it's dividing. I mean, it works as one as well. And what's up, Bigfoot? I'm just talking a little bit about Afghanistan because it's the biggest thing. It's the biggest thing going on right now. And you know that they knew that it was a blunder because Psaki has been MIA. Biden's been at Camp David. The vice president. Anybody know where the vice president is right now? Anybody know? I don't think anybody even knows where she is. She's not answering questions. She's not. You know, she's not anywhere handy that anybody can ask her any questions. And then, what was it, yesterday, Biden came out, did a press conference, said his piece, turned around. Everybody's like, we got some questions. I mean, we got, you know, he just left. He knows it was a blunder. But he'll get out there and gaslight with George Stephanopoulos and say, no, there is no way this could have been done better. If Trump was in office, he would have done the same thing, and this would have caught him the same way. I don't believe that for a second. I don't believe that for a second. He was in negotiations with the Taliban, and one thing that's the other thing that everyone's trying to do. Well, Trump set the deadline. You know, it was Trump's negotiation. It was his deal. We're just going by that. Okay, Trump was building a freaking wall, too. Trump had a pipeline, too. Trump had, he had stopped the Russian pipeline. What? Since when have you maintained anything that Trump did that was good that you didn't think, if it turned bad, would turn out to be his fault? Because this is one of those things. They're trying to deflect it back onto Trump, who had, you know, if you take it out of context, Trump actually had quite a few, points to the negotiation where it's, you know, conditions based. If this is happening and this is consistent and everybody's attitude is wonderful, then yes, we will begin, you know, this drawdown, and we'll try to get our civilians out. You know, all you have to do is get the military out last. That's all you had to do. Instead, overnight, in the dark of night, they wake up and everybody's gone. All their civilian mechanics are gone. All their air support gone. I heard a number of times, you know, today that the Afghanis were being taught to fight, but it was basically being taught to fight the way the Americans fight, which is, you know, you go and explore, and then you know, if you get pinned down, you got, you know, maybe 5 minutes away from air support. Boom. Well, they were, you know, they had gotten to rely on that. Well, not only do they not have any air support, they don't have anybody fixing their air vehicles, their helicopters or their whatever else they had. So anyways, the whole point was, all you had to do was take the military out last. Instead, you take them out first. That's it. And now you have to bring people back in to try and get those other people out. Without, you know, and then figure out how many of them have been taken hostage so far. There's a million things that could have been done differently. What did he say on Trump said on Hannity's show that when he was talking with the Taliban guy, I don't know, I didn't even know his name, I don't care. He said, if there's any, you know, if there's any attacks, I'm coming for your village. And then he told him the name of the village where the guy lived. And he says, your village is going to get leveled. Do you understand? And Biden doesn't have that kind of balls to say anything like that or even do anything like that. So that was the big thing today. I mean, it is. It's embarrassing and it's infuriating when even us, way down here on the peon level, can take a look at a situation of getting that in Afghanistan. If you want to get the people out, the last people that you take out are the people who are protecting everything that's over there. I mean, if you take the protectors out first, everybody else is just there twisting in the wind, as they say. So that was definitely the wrong way to do that. But he'll, like I said, he'll gaslight with George Stephanopoulos. No, there was no other way to be able to do this. There was no other right way to do this. If you're an ideologue, I suppose, you know, if you want the Taliban to be different than what they are, you know, after all, the snake is the snake. I'm a snake. I'm going to bite you. You know, they don't like to see that. They like to think that human nature is something that they can control or that they can overcome or discount. I don't know what more we can. There's probably more there that I can think of to say. I don't know what else to say about it right now. If they were trying to divide the country further, that's what they're doing. If they're trying to totally destroy America in the eyes of the world, A, in the eyes of America itself, B, then what else would you do? How else would you go about doing the destruction of America? My college thesis, if I ever won the lottery and didn't have to work and I could go back to college or whatever, I think my college thesis would be the progressive agenda equals the destruction of natural law in all its forms. That's my thesis. That's my guide. That's my North Star. That right there. Everything that I see, everything that I hear about the progressive agenda, I can see, I can relate some way to, well, that's just the destruction or the, you know, the annihilation of natural law. Men are men, boys are boys, girls are girls. Well, that's gone. You can't rely on that thousands of year old natural law. You can't, that's gone. Marriages between a man and a woman, also thousands of years. I mean, everything, any individual freedom, I mean, we can't have that. You can't have individual freedom because the way they see it is, whatever you do by the river is upstream of all those people that are downstream. So we have to control your behavior with what you do with the water in the river. So you get everything controlled. Well, let me get into some of these other things here. I did that one. All right. I'll start with probably chapter 4. I'm going to get into some of the points and concepts that I have in the old book, Reality is Not Optional. So if G-Ski ever gets that thing going, and you guys can kind of get a taste of what's the program I'm using to open a page is just running really, really slow right now. So I had a few of these, probably like three chapters with items in there that I highlighted. So anyways, while I wait for that thing to get ready, because I got to open it up a little bit. What happened to this one? All right. Looks like it's responding now. Okay. What was this one? Oh, that's not one that I wanted to do first. You only have, you know, so much room on your screen, so. It's what you're keeping open. What was this one? Oh, the R2P. All right. So, this chapter 7, The Politics of Revolution. Now, at the time, you think back to 2012-ish, the global events going on was the Arab Spring. Don't know if anybody else remembers that, but I think in the book, I cited Zbigniew Brzezinski, who happened to be the National Security Advisor to the Carter administration. And I outed him with this one world government aspirational quote. The era of global supremacy by a major power is over. He said the world, the world is now much more diversified. There is now the new East in Asia. There is now a global politically awakened population. It's big, but that doesn't mean the demise of the United States as long as we're willing to make some changes, Brzezinski says. Jimmy Carter, who sparked the Islamic Revolution in Iran back in the 1970s, he did that by assisting the overthrow of the Shah of Iran and supported the installation of the Ayatollah Khomeini. Since then, Islamic law has been enforced by Islamic thugs on all the people of that once great society. The people of Iran are just that. The rulers are the sick, twisted, sadistic ones who wish to encourage the return of the sacred Mahdi, the 12th Imam. This Shiite belief calls for calamity and bloodshed on the earth on a massive global scale before his return. What better way to accomplish this than with nuclear weapons? At the time, Iran was still starting to pursue nuclear weapons. So, let's see. Let me move some stuff. And okay, so back to Jimmy Carter. For all his support with overthrowing the Shah and installing the Ayatollah, he was thanked on November 4th, 1979, with the capturing and holding of 66 American U.S. embassy workers in Tehran and held them for 444 days. After a few embarrassing attempts, failed to recover the hostages, they were released a few minutes after Ronald Reagan had been sworn in as the new American president. And I don't know if it was since I wrote this or before. I bet if I knew about it before I wrote this, I would have included something. There was a movie called Argo, and it stars Ben Affleck as a CIA, agent, advisor type of thing. And he had come up with this idea to get the hostages out. And it turns out this is a true story. He had come up with this idea to get the hostages out by posing as a movie producer who wanted to use the location of Iran for filming. In other words, they had to go to the state and try to get permission to film on location in Iran. And they didn't have a script. They didn't know anything really about it. He had to consult with a guy who was a movie producer. And in order to convince the Iranian government that, this was legitimate, because they were very skeptical and wary because they were holding, obviously, American hostages. So, and they knew that we had a CIA who would try to trick them however they could. So, interestingly enough, the script and storyboards that they used, or that they acquired a script and some storyboards, and to use as like props to help convince the Iranian government that they were legit, the script and storyboards were from the movie Star Wars. They had taken some other steps to help, help validate they might have even taken one of the actors over there. I can't remember exactly what it was. But it was the movie Star Wars and the storyboards that someone had written out, a section of the a few scenes on storyboards from the script. So it was, in other words, it was a real script and it were real storyboards, but they were just kind of borrowed. They weren't really going to film stuff there. They were just using this as a way to get access to the country at which point they would secretly gather, you know, the people who, you know, the people who were remaining. Now, they weren't hostages in, they weren't hostages in like a dungeon or a gulag. They, in other words, the Iranians didn't necessarily know a who the government workers were from the embassy. They didn't know who they were, and they didn't know exactly where they were. What they did have is a tight lock on anybody who could leave, or who would have left. And they all posed as individuals on a film crew, and they each had a title. So in other words, Ben Affleck went over there. He got access to the thing. He basically he got like permission to use that area. So then he's kind of like going around and rounding up who were the hostages, and telling and giving them a backstory that they were they held this position in his film company. So you need a film crew. You need, you know, all the things that are involved. You know, I mean, when you're making a movie, your crew is like immense. Well, back in the 70s, they have a lot of logistics to wade through. And so all these people had an assignment and a role to play as part of that film crew. And then when they were done, they, you know, they all basically got on a plane, and, you know, after they scouted their location, they all got on a plane and went home, and they were cleared to go because they were with this group of they were with the group of the film crew. So that was a lot of the hostages. It wasn't all of them, but like I said, right here in they had they captured like 66 of them, but Ben Affleck had gotten, not Ben, but the guy that he was playing, went in there and got a lot of the other ones out before. He didn't get them all, but he got a lot of them out, and the ones that were that they kept, they released after Ronald Reagan was sworn in as the new president. So I thought that was pretty interesting, if nothing else. The signing of the Algiers Accords brought the situation to a close. Okay. That's a good point. All right. So the signing of the Algiers Accords brought this situation to a close. But in my opinion, they would have been released when they were anyway. The negotiating is a stall tactic used in Islam. Whenever they negotiate, stall until they're strong enough to not have to negotiate. If they're negotiating, it means they realize that they don't have the upper hand. That's the only reason to negotiate in Islam. So anyways, I had put about that, put that in that book. Let me see. Okay, here we go. The International Crisis Group. George Soros, whom I wrote about extensively in my previous book, Stay Mad, has among the many other progressive causes he supports monetarily and otherwise, formed a global crisis group to intervene diplomatically and politically between conflict areas in the world. It's called the ICG, International Crisis Group, funded by the George Soros Open Society Institute. The board of directors consists of George Soros, Jimmy Carter, Zbigniew Brzezinski, and Samuel Berger, and Thomas Pickering, a retired U.S. ambassador. And at the top, a man named Gareth Evans. This is what my research at the time yielded from the ICG. So I've got some quotes from their website apparently. Give top priority to ending armed movements mainly. Okay. Let's see. To avoid excess reliance on military means and do not allow these movements' purported links to Al-Qaeda to rule out a negotiated end to their campaigns. That's some of the ICG's recommendation to the Algerian government. Okay. That's fantastic. Okay, here we go. The ICG, according to their website, has consistently drawn on the doctrine R2P. Well, what is that? In its efforts to help prevent conflict worldwide, the International Crisis Group has consistently drawn upon the doctrine of the responsibility to protect. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is because, you know, in fairness, I had forgotten about this R2P thing, but it's definitely something that should be reengaged right now for Afghanistan. They should go in and depose the Taliban. But if you read between the lines, this responsibility to protect and the International Crisis Group is set up and geared to the opposition of any American influence. So here we go. The principle that sovereign states and the international community as a whole have a responsibility to protect civilians from mass atrocity crimes. Crisis Group President Gareth Evans served as co-chair of the International Commission on Intervention and State Sovereignty, sovereignty that first developed the R2P concept in 2001. What is responsibility to protect? The responsibility of states and where they fail the international community to protect civilians from mass atrocity crimes. Okay. Why does responsibility to protect matter? Because it's the right thing to do. These are quotes from their website, probably. Because it's the right thing to do. Our common humanity demands that the world never again sees another Holocaust, Cambodia, Rwanda, Bosnia. How many of those are actually denied now by progressives? Anyways, because it's in every country's interest, states that can't or won't stop internal mass atrocity crimes are states that can't or won't stop terrorism, weapons proliferation, the spread of health pandemics, and other global risks. Yeah, this is from their website. So, what kind of action does responsibility to protect require? Overwhelmingly, prevention. Through measures aimed in particular at building state capacity, remedying grievances, and ensuring the rule of law. But if prevention fails, R2P requires whatever measures, economic, political, diplomatical, legal, security, or in the last resort, military, become necessary to stop mass atrocity crimes occurring. Stick with me on this, all right, because there's a point to all this. Here's another question on their website. Whose responsibility is R2P? So for individual states, R2P means the responsibility to protect their own citizens and to help other states build their capacity to do so. For international organizations, including the UN, R2P means the responsibility to warn, to generate effective prevention strategies, and when necessary, to mobilize effective reactions. for civil society groups and individuals, R2P means the responsibility to force the attention of policymakers on what needs to be done by whom and when. So, lobbyists. All right. Here's another question from their website. How and why did the idea of R2P originate? Hey, it's been a while since I've even looked at this. I totally forgot about this. Throughout the 1990s, controversy raged, particularly over Rwanda and Bosnia and Kosovo, between supporters of a, quote, right of humanitarian intervention, unquote, and those who argued that state sovereignty, as recognized in the UN Charter, precluded any intervention in internal matters. The R2P concept was aimed at bridging that gap. It originated with a report of the International Commission on Intervention and State Sovereignty, the responsibility to protect, in 2001, and became a central theme in the recommendations of the UN High-Level Panel, A More Secure World, in 2004, and of the UN Secretary General, in Larger Freedom, in 2005. So it says, what is the current status of the R2P idea? And keep in mind, current meaning 2012-ish. It says, the world's heads of state and government unanimously accepted the concept of R2P at the UN World Summit in September 2005. The Security Council has also accepted the general principle. Hold on. But the task remains as each new danger of mass atrocity crimes threatens to translate that principled acceptance into effective action at the international, national, and community level. Okay. The UN doctrine, which was adopted from the International Commission on Intervention and State Sovereignty, was in large part influenced by Samantha Powers, who defined the tenets of it. The International Crisis Group has no enforcement means, so partnering with the International Criminal Court, which is relied on heavily by the UN and the ICG, has tacit access to the military of the UN. But it gets worse. The responsibility to protect is a set of principles now backed by the United Nations based on the idea that sovereignty is not a privilege but a responsibility. This is an observation that I made that I'm not sure applies anymore because they are trying to dissolve all sovereignty. Given that we have no southern border, then we don't have a sovereign country. We'll get into that maybe later. All right. A country can be attacked by the international community. Any nation's sovereignty can be overrun, including with the use of force, if the international community decides that it must act to halt what it determines to be either genocide or war crimes, crimes against humanity, or ethnic cleansing. So this is a definition was given by Aaron Klein on his radio program, March 27, 2011. So how can anyone argue with any of this in the name of humanity? Of course it makes perfect sense until it gets deployed. From there, one can speculate the perversion of the definition of the texts, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. Imagine if this doctrine were used back when Dick Cheney was accused of war crimes and crimes against humanity. Does this mean our borders would be violated by UN peacekeepers to overthrow Dick Cheney? Okay. The point here is to point out a typical tactic of the commie filth, where it's the accusation is all that counts. So it gets decided, something gets decided, and then the media jumps on board dutifully and rallies popular support for what may indeed violate someone's right to due process, for example. How many times have we seen that just in the past 1 year or in the past 5 years? It's just the accusation that counts. What about, you know, the Supreme Court guy there, Karen King, forgot his name. It's not Gorsuch, but the other one. Where they just accuse, you know, and it's like at this point, they may as well print it on a boilerplate what they're going to do, because it is the same thing every time. The problem is that sometimes it works. Kavanaugh, that's his name. Kavanaugh, thank you. All right. So anyways, the boilerplate is the accusation. You can actually predict who's, you know, when somebody falls out of favor, they will be accused of something. Well, then, of course, it's true. I mean, they'll lose their life, their livelihood. They'll lose their friends. They'll lose their status. They'll lose their position. They'll lose, you know, everything that means anything. And that's hard to defend against. That is hard to overcome, because they have so many useful idiots that will just play along. They just think what they think. I have friends I have people that I used to call friends. I can't really call them friends anymore because they're just stupid. Anyways, so that's the R2P that I stumbled across today, looking through the book about, you know, looking for getting some content. Again, the context of this stuff that I was just reading is like 2011, 2012, and that's what was going on back then. Now, why can't – I didn't go to the R2P website. I didn't go there to find out what they say now, because – how can you apply what's going on in Afghanistan now that there's no American military or British military to stop the Islamic law? Islamic law is crimes against humanity. It's just justified by this is Islamic law. Sharia. And don't say Sharia law, because that's redundant. Sharia. That's all there is. That's all you have to say. Sharia. Because it translates to Islamic law. So if you say, well, it's Sharia law, you're going to make an ass of yourself. You don't need to say all that. It's just Sharia. You know, I saw some TikToks of some of the Taliban getting interviewed, and you know, they're talking about discipline. You know, like if they're talking about if somebody's married and they commit adultery, they get stoned to death. if somebody steals something and it's proven, they get their hand cut off. So the adulterer will get 10 lashes in public. Okay, all right. Well, this is what it says in the Quran, so take that shirt down and put your hands up here, and we'll get on with the discipline. After this, you'll be free to go. Okay. You will have paid your debt. 10 lashes in public. I'm just trying to wrap my head around. If, you know, how would that really... whatever. So then the guy's going on to say that, if a woman steps out on a man, she'll get stoned to death, and he'll get the 10 lashes, but she'll get stoned to death. Or if she had sex outside of marriage, stoned to death. That's what it is. I used to know all these things. You know, I used to be a big listener of the Usama Dak Doc radio show. That guy was a genius. He translated the Quran, and he did it truly, because a lot of these other English translations water stuff down, but that's not what it says, because he speaks Arabic. He speaks the language of the Quran. But anyways, Bigfoot says, I suppose that the adulterer could get something cut off. No. The male adulterer gets 10 lashes in public. The woman who would have sex outside of marriage will be stoned to death. And I'm not talking with marijuana, because, you know, anything to death is still death, but marijuana versus getting rocks thrown at your head, being buried in a pit and having rocks thrown at your head until you die, that's rough. So the reporter asks him, are you not even a little bit concerned that the rest of the people of Afghanistan, or even the rest of the people of the world, will find these punishments like over the top and crazy and outrageous? To which the Taliban guy replied, would you have these crimes go unpunished? That's what he said. Would you have these go unpunished? As if there is no other possible punishment, even conceivable, no other conceivable punishment that could be applied. Can you imagine if we had Sharia here? Oh my God. What would the progressives do? They throw gay people off of buildings and stuff like that. I mean, they would have a field day. Let me see here. So that was my point of reading that stuff, because you should be able to employ the responsibility to protect in the case of Afghanistan. You know, I mean, it's almost like they have all those rules and all those regulations, but they only really apply against America. Oh, well, we didn't know you meant Afghanistan. Afghanistan hasn't really... People in Afghanistan don't think they live in Afghanistan. They just have these little tribes here and there. They have the mountains. They have the caves. You know, it's like they have a whole different concept of where they live. Whether or not they call it even Afghanistan, you know, in these some of these little you know villages or towns or whatever. Anyway, yeah, we got a great show for you. I should probably take a top of the hour. Can't believe I've been blathering on for that long. I got a couple more things that I want to talk about. In the Rules for Radicals book, and I'll see if I can figure out a way to segue into this, but maybe I'll just dive in. Not only do you have the Rules for Radicals, but there was another chapter from chapter 2 in that book called The Rules of Means and Ends. And I found that to be very interesting and kind of like enlightening. But yeah, so here we go. We're halfway through the show. Thanks for sticking around. We appreciate everybody coming in. You didn't have to, but you did. And whoever's going to be listening to this later on podcast, stick around. We got another whole bit. And don't forget, we're going to have to play that banned on YouTube Bacon Zone song. We have it well established here on Blog Talk Radio. Here we go. Taking a break.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
We can create a million new manufacturing jobs in the next 4 years. If you believe in a country where everyone gets a fair shot and everyone does their fair share and everyone plays by the same rules, yes, our road is longer, but we travel it together.
Imagine the breakthroughs that are on the horizon. And just beyond.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
America, I never said this journey would be easy. And I won't promise that now.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
All right, so I had a caller that wanted to chime in. If the caller is still listening and you want to call back, I'll get you as soon right after the break, all right? Sorry about that. Just had a page covering the phone thing. We'll be right back.
Yeah, tell me mama, are we there yet? Tell me mama, are we there yet?
We keep our eyes fixed on that distant horizon.
Tell me mama, are we there yet?
Are we there yet?
Tell me mama, are we there yet?
We can create a million new manufacturing jobs in the next 4 years. If you believe in a country where everyone gets a fair shot and everyone does their fair share and everyone plays by the same rules,
tell me mama, are we there?
Yes, our road is longer, but we travel it together.
Tell me mama, are we there yet? Yeah.
Imagine the breakthroughs that are on the horizon and just beyond.
Tell me mama, are we there yet?
America, I never said this journey would be easy, and I won't promise that now.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Yes, our path is harder, but it leads to a better place.
Mama, are we there yet?
Are we there yet?
Not yet.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
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 Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Are we there yet?
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Are we there yet?
It's literally around the corner.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Imagine a world in which hunger is vanquished.
Tell
by crops that don't depend on the soil, water, or fertilizer, or pesticides to thrive.
Are we there yet?
They're just around the corner.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
Imagine a world in which nations no longer depend on nuclear weapons for their defense.
Tell me, mama, are we there yet?
You're listening to Renaissance Radio on Airwaves America with Dave and GC Rock.
Good evening, infidel.
Well, I used to eat bacon. Cause I like the way it tastes. Now I eat it for jihadis, just to say in your face. I eat bacon, wrapped in bacon, rolled in bacon bits, and I do that to kick off. I don't care if they like it or not. It offends them, it's in their Quran.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's right.
You ain't gonna take my bacon.
No.
I'm glad you're offended to your shoes. Cause I'd rather eat my bacon. Maybe it's you. I eat bacon wrapped in bacon, cause I like it. It's a bonus that it offends you. So, jihadi, let me help you with your ego. Your religion is a big pile of piety. Let me tempt you with some bacon. Maybe you can recant and join civil society. I'd rather build my church higher than yours and draw little Muhammad cartoons. I'd rather shape my bacon into
you see what I'm trying to say, Abdul? I'd rather you got over yourself.
Finally.
Put an end to all this righteous indignation.
Righteous.
Have some bacon and enjoy it. We can all get along. And from war enjoy permanent vacation. Macaroni and cheese. I'd rather replace all the water in airport foot washes with gallons of bacon grease than worry about offending you. I'd rather eat bacon wrapped in bacon, rolled in bacon bits off your Quran, open to 9-5.
Than worry about offending you.
All right.
You have reached the family of Airwaves America. Renaissance Radio presents the Dave and GC Rock Show. Thanks for joining our informative, stimulating, thought-provoking, and entertaining show. Welcome.
And welcome back. I got Dave here from the Dave and G-Ski Rock Show. Real quick, if you want to chime in, the number's plastered all over the webpage. If you're listening to this on that, 516-387-1705. If you want to chime in, hit the 1. I do apologize. We had a caller on there that had called in and hit the number 1, but I had a page covering that part of it. So apparently they weren't in the chat room, so I couldn't really, I didn't get to them in time. I only saw them when I took a break. If you're still out there, give a call back, hit the 1, we'll give you a shot, and see how that goes. All right, hopefully it's not the troll from last week, and we'll, because I'll cut you off.
Hello? Can you hear me? I just wanted to let you know, like, on the blog talk side, like, on the phone side, you can't hear your audio at all. I don't know if you were aware of that. Yeah, so when you, I heard the system when I called in, and then when you unmuted my mic, I heard that, but I'm not hearing any of your audio. I don't know if you can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, yeah, I can hear you now. I don't know, was your mic muted, or was that on purpose, or?
Well, this is Sue from New Mexico. I don't know quite what's happened today, but if you want to go ahead with your call, that would be really interesting.
Oh, okay. So are you like a guest that called in too, or?
Well, yeah, I promote their show. I've been with G-Ski and Dave for years. So
okay.
I can kind of help fill in till we get Dave back.
Oh, has it been locked down for a while, or was his audio working before?
He went down, I don't know, maybe about 5 minutes or so ago. He may have been trying to bring you in, and then Blog Talk kicked him out, which Blog Talk's known to do. And who is this?
Oh, my name is Mike.
Hi, Mike.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Anyway,
that's kind of awkward, huh?
What was it?
Well, so what was Dave talking about? What was the show about today?
Well, what Dave was, he was going over his book, his second book. He had covered part on what had gone on with Afghanistan. And I don't know if you heard of, he wrote 2 books. The first was Stay Mad, and then the other, I just went blank. Reality is Not an Option or something, I think it is. And it's just amazing. He's going through different parts of these books that he wrote, 5-10 years ago, and how all of it is so relevant, which, you know, is happening today. So that's kind of where he was at today on the show.
Okay. So was he sort of critical of the whole execution of the withdrawal?
He touched on it. You know, he said this wasn't the way to do it, which I think pretty much everyone has said that, including,
right.
You know, the lot of the Democrats.
Yeah.
What's your feeling on it?
No, I agree. I was kind of surprised. I hadn't really been paying attention to the news and came across it today and just seen all the stuff. And I just don't understand why they pulled the troops out without before they took all the U.S. citizens, all the non-Afghan citizens out and everyone that was supposed to help them. I don't understand why they wouldn't take them out before they withdraw the troops.
Well, the troops should have stayed in, number one. That was a big mistake that he did. And he pulled them out in the middle of the night. He didn't even tell Great Britain what he was doing. He didn't tell our allies or anyone what he was doing. It's just all of a sudden they were gone. Now, I know on Twitter I also ran across something, but I have not checked it out. I don't know if it's true. That the general who was taking over the operations, I guess they were switching, he wasn't even aware that the troops were gone for about a couple of hours. Now, I haven't verified this, so, you know, I don't know if that's true, but as crazy as everything is, it could be. But I know Great Britain is very, very upset. They've got a lot of their citizens that are, you know, they can't get them to the airport. And, you know, that one plane that they took out 600 and some, you know, they just filled it, packed it with, you know, Afghanistan's trying to get out. And that was the big, you know, one that left. Well, that pilot, he was on the news. He was given a stand down order by Biden and his administration that he was not to take anyone out. And he decided, I can't leave these women, children, you know, American citizens. I've got to get out what I can get out. And so he did. I don't know what's happening to him, if he's being court-martialed or what, but he has been out there talking about that too. And I believe that they've instituted the, you know, before Trump, their rules of engagement were different to where you could not shoot, you know, at an enemy unless they shot at you first, which caused a lot of soldiers, you know, to get wounded and die. And I've heard that that has been reinstituted.
Wow. Yeah, I know. Well, the thing that surprised me was seeing, like, you know, the more liberal-leaning networks like CNN and MSNBC and ABC News be so critical of Biden. I was kind of surprised because up till now, they've essentially treated him with, you know, relatively kid gloves and really softly, and it's like even they're coming hard down on him, and it's also kind of calmed me up into that comment.
You know, I agree. I was shocked, and especially CNN. Who is that guy? He's got the white beard. He really came down on him. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Is he like one of the panelists? CNN, is he on his own show?
He's a commentator. He's on CNN a lot. But anyway, he came down on him. You know, if you really want to find out what's going on, I don't know if you do YouTube or anything, but Australia Sky News is really reporting the facts, you know, and so that's where a lot of information that I'm getting is coming out of Australia. They seem, you know, and a lot of things that I'm hearing from them, you know, you're still not hearing it in the United States. And what was frustrating to me, he had, I think it was yesterday, one of his generals came out and they were, you know, giving him questions and stuff. He was saying, we still don't have any plans. you know, it just boggles the mind. And how can a general get out and say, we still don't have any plans of how we're going to do this? And I think it was today they even said that they don't know how many Americans are actually there.
Wow. Really? They don't know?
That's what they were saying. You know, they have this big press conference thing and everything. And, you know, they said, you know, we've got to get the paperwork and, you know, all this and that. And there's one American citizen who got a message out to some journalists. And he said he showed, you know, his passport, I'm American. He had a 10-year-old son trying to get out, and he said the Marines turned him back, even with the paperwork that he had. So I don't think anybody really knows what the heck they're doing yet.
So you think this is going to have an effect on the midterm elections?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to affect it. His approval rating, Biden's, has already gone down to 46, or it's probably dropping below that, too. I don't know if you've seen any of the polls. They had a focus group that I watched, and, you know, while Biden was given one of his first addresses, and even the Democrats were giving him pretty much failing grades. But the funny thing is, they don't want Kamala Harris in there either. So they're kind of at, you know, not knowing exactly what do we do now. We don't want Harris in there, but, you know, look what Biden's doing.
Right. Like, I'm looking at Real Clear Politics right now. The most recent polls, like, basically since this whole thing started was they got YouGov, Rasmussen, and Reuters. And hold on 1 second.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. They're reconnecting me now.
Hey, hi, Dave.
Oh, okay. So hi, Sue.
Yeah, we've been chatting until you got back in. Very interesting caller. His name's Mike. He's great.
Okay. Well, hi, Mike. Now apparently I can hear you. Let's give it a try. Chime in. Mike, are you there? Yeah, I can't hear Mike.
He was just looking up a poll.
Okay. All right, well, take it away. Is he there? Because I got his mic open.
I can barely hear him. Dave, try to mute yourself while he talks and see if he can come through.
Okay. All right. I'm trying.
Okay, Mike, try to talk again. Didn't work, Dave.
Okay.
Blog talk's being really bad today.
Oh,
yeah.
It says caller 612 has just dropped. So, wow.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know how much of the stuff. Yeah, he might. So I wonder how much of the stuff that I've been saying even was coming through.
I lost you. I got no sound. For about the last 5-10 minutes, there was no sound, and then Mike came on.
Oh.
So I unmuted myself, and I started talking to him.
Well, listen, then you were running the show, and I appreciate that, because I don't have maybe he'll call back, and I hope he does, especially now that you approve of him.
Yeah. Well, he wanted to know, you know, what you had been talking about and everything, and I told him about your two books, and you've been going over different parts of your books, which you wrote a while back and which are still very relevant, today
amazed.
And everything.
Yeah, and I got to say, I am amazed at the relevance of what I wrote you know, 6-7 years ago is right
oh,
now.
Yeah.
You know, and it's uh-huh. not an accident that whenever progressives are, you know, weasel their way into power, this is what they do. They're trying to destroy the country. They're trying to take it down. I just don't know what they think that looks like. You know what I mean? What does it look like?
Yeah.
What are they trying? What is their end game? What is their goal? What are they trying to get to?
You've touched on this before, though, Dave, because with, you know, communism, you have to take it down to the bare bones, and then you bring it back up. You know, you've kind of touched on that before, haven't you? Is that what they're trying to do?
Well, yeah, but when you take it down to the back, communism doesn't bring it up to anything. It stays there.
But they think it does. You know, they obviously think it does. So,
I saw
something interesting today. Maybe you want to remark on it. They said, I guess when Russia pulled out of Afghanistan, it was almost as bad, not as bad, but almost. And this one commentator was saying that had a lot to do with the fall of the Soviet Union. And then they were kind of talking about, well, is this going to be the fall of the United States?
Well, one thing I don't know is what the fall of the Soviet Union meant to everyday Russians. Now, the fall of the Soviet Union, as far as I know, means that they were kind of deposed from some of their surrounding neighbor countries. What I don't know is what it meant for, you know, the everyday Russian. What did it mean for them?
Well, you know, I think in the beginning they started seeing, you know, a little bit more freedom in everything. Because if you go back, Russian history has fascinated me. I had a college professor that was his thing. And, you know, they couldn't do anything. You had the KGB, you had people spying on people. You know, it was just really bad, the oppression. And that kind of lifted. But the problem right now is, the KGB never really went away. And Putin was very high in the KGB. So in a way, you know, the Soviet Union really never did go away.
Right.
It just took a reprieve.
Hey, let me ask you this.
Okay.
Are you aware of the school teacher? I don't even remember what town, what area, what state or what town it was, got in front of the school board and, you know, complaining about what the school board was making them do, said, the only thing I can do is resign here in front of you. Did you hear anything about? Okay.
There's been more than one teacher. There was
the one that I'm talking about had cited that the school board had even passed out like questionnaires if somebody had heard somebody say something against the school board or the curriculum and stuff like that they were to be reported. And I heard that and I was like, oh my God.
There was actually an organization. Yeah, they outed the people. They put out their addresses, where they work. You know, it was pretty bad. I can't think of what you call that right now.
The school district did that?
Yeah, the school board members, and they started it. But there was a group who liked what the school board, you know, I guess you call them your progressives or your socialists, whoever, who liked what was going on. And so they formed a group along with the school board. I mean, they were behind it, and they were giving them names. And anyway, these people, their places of business, their families, where they lived, addresses, phone numbers, all of that was put out on social media. Of course, you know, ghetto Jacko, he'll take it down, but not until damage has been done. But yeah, these people went through hell.
I mean that was pretty amazing. And when and she kind of said it like an offhanded thing, we were given questionnaires to, in other words, to report on anybody in the organization that spoke anything in opposition to what you know their agenda is.
And that's,
well, that's
exactly
communism
what
right
it
there.
Was like in the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. And people were encouraged to report on other people. You didn't know if you could trust your neighbors. You know, that was the Soviet Union at its height. You know, in a way, that is coming back.
So that's coming here, right? But what is it like there now? Is that just the way it is, and everybody doesn't trust anybody, or you know, I mean, what is life like right now in Moscow, for example, for
my
people who live there?
My aunt took her and her family. She's from Germany. She's German. And about 5-6 years ago, they took a cruise and they went to Russia, went into Moscow and everything. And according to her, people there are very happy. They're out. They would talk to you. You know, it wasn't like, say, it is in China where, you know, no one can talk to no one. There was, according to her, a lot of openness. And they were able to talk to the Russian people, which I know, you know, when the Soviet Union was really, you know, into the communism big time, you know, Stalin and that, you couldn't do something like that. But
I think
it's reversing in the Soviet Union. I think it's reversing.
And what does... If you know, I mean, I'm just, you know, these are quite, when I hear something like that, I'm thinking, okay, where does Putin fit into this?
He was the head of the KGB. He's
I know, but where does he
fit? He's all tied in with all of this.
Well, okay.
He's bringing back the communism. He's bringing back the tattling on other people,
Okay.
Reverting, yeah, that's what he's doing.
Okay, all right. Because that's how they get more power. I mean, okay, I got it. All right, so
what I was doing
was I was going through the rules of means and ends from the book The Rules for Radicals, and I don't know how much of that did anybody hear. Did you hear some of that?
Just a little of it. Why don't you just repeat it? Because I can always hear everything again.
Okay, so
and
that's fine.
Yeah,
I mean, and listen, feel free to chime in on anything that I'm going to go over. I'm going to start back at the beginning because I don't know when, you know, from when I was dropped off. Didn't even know I was.
Sounds good.
All right, so the rule number one says one's concerns with the ethics of means and ends varies inversely with one's personal interest in the issue. And then it also says one's concerns with the ethics of means and ends varies inversely also with one's distance from the scene of the conflict. So in other words, the more you like something, the less concern with the ethics you are. Or in addition, the closer you are to something, the lower the concern of the ethics involved. And my observation in the book was, in my view, ethics actually should be the constant. Whether you like something or not, whether you're right next door to something or not, ethics should be the constant. So, but what he says is one's concerns with the ethics of means and ends varies inversely with how much they're interested in it. And it also, it varies inversely with how far they are away from it. So the closer they are, the less interested they are with ethics. The more they're involved, the more interest the less they are. All right, so Susie, it looks like we got our caller back, area code 612. I am opening your microphone. Ready, go. Let's see if it works this time. Mike? Is this Mike? No?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
No?
I can hear you, so go ahead.
Oh. You guys able to hear me?
Yep, able to hear you now. For some reason, they're letting it through.
I was breaking up on my end.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just wanted to ask you, because we were talking earlier about the whole situation in Afghanistan. How would you think they should have done it, and how would you have done things differently if you were in charge?
Oh, I did cover that, but what I said was, I mean, even people furthest away from it, and even down on the level that we are as peons, we can look at it and say, if you have a whole network of people there from the military who are enforcing the stability to the people who are supporting the military and who are, you know, feeding, you know, like cooks, chefs, you know, whatever, people, you know, in support roles. And then the people who are of Afghanistan who are helping us against the threat, then those people should have come out first. That's how I would have done it. If you have a whole network of things, you need to leave the enforcement mechanism there until last. If you're going to pull everybody out, that's fine. Whatever. If that's what you're going to do, bring out the people who are support. Bring out the people who are, you know, the civilian supporters, the civilian contractors. Bring out the embassy people. Bring out the American citizens, the Americans who are working over there on behalf of the state, of us. And then at the end, bring out the military. That's my answer to your question. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's great. I have one last follow-up question. This is sort of off topic, and if you don't want to talk about it, it's fine. But do you believe in God?
I do.
Yeah. Do you?
Yes, I do. Do you have a follow-up to that?
Yeah. Would you consider yourself to be a Christian, or are you a different faith, or?
Yes, Christian.
Christian, and I'm wondering, is it like Catholic or Protestant, or like what type of Christian are you exactly?
For me, it doesn't matter. Where are you going with it?
I was just wondering, because I'll say this, like I'm an immigrant myself to this country, and I'm just sort of like getting a gauge of things, and it's interesting how the perspective I have from the outside versus what it's actually like
here. Where are you from?
Very different things.
Where are you from?
From Ethiopia.
From who?
Ethiopia.
Ethiopia? Okay.
Yeah. It's just that outside of America.
Do you believe in God?
I'm a Christian. I'm just saying, like, outside of America, the perception is that America's like this majority Christian country, and it's like this strong Christian country. And then when you come here, it's like you realize the secularists and the atheists just dominate your country. Like, they just control everything.
Okay, about that. They are the only thing that gets any amplification in the country. They don't dominate it. But according to the media, that's what it is. It's just the atheists and the secularists are in control, and that's what they want you to believe, and that's what they put out. So I don't believe that I'm in a minority as a Christian.
Right. I wouldn't say in numbers you're a minority. I guess more in influence. Like, you wouldn't think, if you were to bring someone here and then didn't tell them anything about America and just drop them off and ask them, like, what do you think this country is? I think the last thing anyone would say is this is a Christian country or this is a majority Christian country. I don't think anyone would think that.
Well, I can't really disagree with that. I can't. I think
like,
that
is this like a recent thing, or has it always been like this, or just sort of like a recent phenomenon?
It's probably in the last decade it really has gotten that way because it goes back to the it comes around to the issue of tenure, the universities. Those are the shapers of generations. So if you can get a generation to think a certain way, that's the way it is. And that's the way, and those people will come up thinking a certain way, and they will eventually take over all the positions that become available in every aspect. So people that have gone to university, they have been indoctrinated to think, you know, that this is the way it is, that's the way it should be, and that's why I think between the universities and the media, it's hard to combat that. It's not.
Do you think that go ahead.
No, I was going to say it's not the way the country was founded. You know, it was founded on, you know, people, you know, one of the biggest literature pieces that was, you know, period of the founding was the Bible. So, but, you know, now that's kind of passe. That's, you know, old time. And part of the thing that they teach is history starts today. So. What were you going to say? Go ahead.
Do you think that at all, that the sort of hypocrisy of maybe the prior generation, do you think that maybe caused maybe this younger generation to turn away from that?
The hypocrisy in what regard?
Because from what I'm gathering from you and from some of the people I've talked about this is that they say that it's a recent phenomenon and has to do with sort of like the last 10 years or so, and it's more of a generational thing, it seems like. And so I hear people talk about universities and the media and so forth, but I'm wondering, do you think maybe the hypocrisy of the last generation, sort of the older people above, say, the age of 35 that were part of a more Christian America, think that maybe that caused the younger generation to view the church and Christianity with like the contempt that they do now?
That's possible, Mike. But I also know of people whose children have come home from college, and in order to not you know, alienate your child, you kind of let them have whatever argument that they're going for. That way, you know, they'll still love you and you'll still love them. And so I think a lot of it actually, you know, notwithstanding what you're saying with the hypocrisy and stuff like that, I think a lot of it really just came from like the university and, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm way off. But I do, you know, I know people who, you know, say, oh, my kid just came home and said this, you know, well, what'd you do? I didn't say anything. I don't want to fight with them. You know what I mean? So it's a little bit of a lot of things that have gotten us
right.
And what you've mentioned is, you know, I'm sure one of them, you know, when you talk about, you know, the exploits of the Catholic Church, you know, and the child abuse and stuff like that, instead of, you know, making the offenders pay legally, they would move them to another, you know, another district or whatever. They would just move them to a different church.
Right.
So, you know, all of that, like I said, it's a little bit of a lot of things that have contributed to what you're asking. So, I don't know for sure one way or the other. I don't have, you know what I mean? I'm not Nostradamus or
right.
I don't know.
Right. Yeah, it's all about perspectives. It's just interesting, the different views, because it's like people who are a little bit older, they seem to look at it more of a education and media thing. And then people that are younger seem to think of it more of like the hypocrisy of like what their parents or what they saw in church growing up, or, you know what I mean? That seems to be more of their thing they pull into.
Right.
And it's interesting that the difference, you know, it's all perspective at the end of the day, but it's just fascinating to see a country that, like, what America used to be and what it's viewed as outside of here. And then when you come here and you see the fact that the homosexuals, like they have, like, total, you know, you may not like the term total power, but to me it seems like they do, because they seem to be the one group of people you can't really say anything bad about.
Well, I know.
They
I know.
Get to project their views on everybody.
Right.
And now
that,
they have
that,
it, like, demanded to be taught in school to children, which is, like, I can't even believe it. Like, people outside of here, when I tell them, they can't believe it. Like, no way that America has people, they teach homosexuality in school to children. It's like, they
yeah.
do.
They do,
it's,
yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, so Mike, G-Ski just reminded me. He texted me, because he's listening now. So everybody give a big what up, G. So he texted me, and he reminded me that you were the guy that said America has the only fat poor people, which is a which is a reference
it's
that
the
we,
only
we
country
have we have used that.
No,
often.
That's true. America is the only country where being fat is viewed as a bad thing.
Yeah.
Everywhere else in the world, being fat is a status symbol. It means you got enough money to eat enough food to put on enough size.
It was
but
funny
it's like
because
here, everyone's ashamed of being fat. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it's funny because as soon as you said that, it hit me so, like, out of the blue. It was like, of course, because, you know, you not only do you have enough money to eat the food to get fat, you have enough money to buy the food to eat for the length of time it takes to get that.
Right.
So yeah, we actually mentioned that point a few times, and we gave you the credit, and it's a brilliant point.
It's a great point to use against any elect, because, you know, you guys these socialists now that hate your country and they always badmouth America. Whenever I counter these people, I always ask them a simple question. I'm like, can you name me any other country on earth and in history where you had people that were below the so-called poverty limit that are walking around at 300 and 400 pounds? I mean, where else is this happening?
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
You guys got walruses all over the place.
Walruses.
Talking about, woe is me, look how bad I got it. It's like, what? I've never seen it's only in America where you'll see a fat person who claims to be oppressed. It's like, come on, man. you need to get a history book or look around.
Hey,
the world.
All right. So let me hit you with this. Maybe you weren't listening earlier in the show, I had another point that you just kind of touched on. That I put into my, and using air quotes, think for yourself series that I try to do on this show, because I try to be constructive with the show and give people arguments to use. And I noticed that, and I had this thought today. I texted it to G-Ski, and he responded with, oh, by the way, you're going to be solo tonight. But I'm trying to develop this concept. And I wanted to bounce it off him and just kind of remember to mention it today as an argument in the Think for Yourself series. Because progressives who hate this country, they cite past horrors and evils of the government, but they have full faith in the current government. What do you think of that?
Yeah. Well, as long as it's a Democrat, though, right? It's not if it's like when Trump was president.
Well, that's kind of implied.
Right.
Anyways. Yeah, so.
Well, it's because they don't believe in God, if you think about it. Because most of the, and you guys called them progressives, but they're just Marxists. They're really communists. But they, you know, the communists don't believe in God. They substitute government with God.
Well, I stated at the beginning of the show, and again, you probably didn't hear it, but if I was to win the lottery and go back to college, my college thesis would be on how the progressive agenda is nothing more than the destruction of natural law. Everything that they support goes against natural law. And I contend that it's because they don't want to be held accountable for their actions in the natural law. You know, boys aren't girls. Boys aren't boys. Boys can be girls. Well, no, they can't. You know, men can be women. No, they can't. You know, marriage is between a man and a woman. No, it's not. So anyways,
okay to be gay, which is like
right. That's it goes against natural law. Now, as far as I'm concerned, be whatever you want to be, but I'm not. What I'm saying is, it's against natural law. So, Mike, listen. I'm sorry I couldn't chat with you a little bit longer. We're coming up on the end of the show. Susie, thanks very much for chiming in. I've got about 30 seconds left, and I'll probably take us out with a promo. So, thanks. Thanks everybody for listening. Thanks Bigfoot. Thanks G-Ski, who's listening one way. And we'll take it out right now. All right. Have a good night.
You're listening to Renaissance Radio on Airwaves America with Dave and G-Ski Rocks.